Today's episode is brought to you by Florida International University. Looking to get a leg up in your career? Well, look no further. Florida International University has 20 years of excellence in online education, and most master's degree programs can be completed in 12 to 24 months. Their online programs feature the same top-ranked faculty as on-campus classes, and the best part is that an online master's degree from FIU allows flexibility, and their programs are designed to meet the demands of busy education professionals. To learn more, check out fiuonline.com/podcast. That's fiuonline.com/podcast.
The following is a true story and contains explicit content. Names and locations have been kept anonymous in order to protect the privacy of those involved. Listener discretion is advised.
Help me, help me, my wife is dead. Three.
Blood spatter, blood on the wall. Just watch the floor. There's blood there, blood up there.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 2 of The Cleaning of John Doe. I'm your host, Vanessa Fearson, and the following is a true story. We've all had bad days. The spousal fights, the angry bosses, traffic jams, stubbed toes, late to work, and spilled coffees. Yeah, we've all been there and then some. My industry tends to be a bit glorified. It can be interesting, no doubt. That's why you're listening to me today. But despite the subject matter and the stories, behind the scenes we attend, full of salacious and gory details, it's just a job. A job, well, that's had its share of the Mondays. This story I tell you today happened over the course of 4 days on what was supposed to be a quick and easy cleanup. It turned out to be one of the worst jobs we've ever had the displeasure of working on. I feel like I'm saying that a lot recently, but the truth is, if they were easy jobs with no drama, well, there wouldn't be much of a story to tell, would there? So back in the early days of our business, coming by work was not always easy, and it certainly wasn't constant. When the days are ticking off and due dates are staring you in the face, it can be terrifying. Hell, it was terrifying. I could only take so much of it before I had to do something. What we decided to do was find similar but unrelated areas of work so that we could offer more services and have a better chance of staying busy and paid. We discovered a company who flipped homes. They are a huge company buying, fixing, and selling homes all over the state. The branch in LA actually reached out to us, and they asked us if we did trash outs and minor demo. Yep, we sure do. When do you need us? Thus began our gap filler work. These guys would scoop up a foreclosed property. The previous owner would almost always leave a bunch of trash and discarded furniture and other items behind. We would come in, clear out the property, and do some minor demo work to prepare for the construction guys to come in and do their thing to make the property sellable. It was a sweet gig. It wasn't daily work, but it mostly filled the holes in our workload, and we managed to stay afloat. Now, one day, our contact calls us up and says he has a property in Compton that needs a lot of work. Great, we like a lot of work. So we set a time to inspect the property and prepare a bid. We pulled up and luckily found a parking space in front of the property we were there to see. Usually, LA is a nightmare to find parking in. We met with our contact, Jason, and he toured us through the house and the lot that needed our attention. The house itself was a very small one-bedroom house. It looked like it had been built in the 40s and never a single update done since. But the lights still worked, and there wasn't really a whole lot in the way of trash. A few pieces of furniture and some minor debris spread around here and there. The only bit of demo here was to remove the bathtub and toilet. Wow, super easy. Well, that was just the dipping of the toe, because when we went out the back door, the job got a whole lot bigger. Immediately outside the back doorstep, there was a 6-foot-high pile of trash, clothes, toys, trash, and car parts in one big heap. There was more of the same strewn along the side of the house and all over the quarter-acre lot. In addition to the trash, there were 3 homemade sheds in the backyard. After taking a peek inside, it seemed they were finished sheds. So drywall, paint, stucco, and even shingles on the roof. For all intents and apparent purposes, they were little houses. Except there was no electricity, running water, bathrooms, kitchen, or any other of the necessary commodities to make a house a house. It was just 4 walls, a door, and a roof. But there were mattresses and clothes inside of each. Someone had actually been living in these things. They weren't exactly built to code, but they'd keep the rain out. So those had to come down. Complete demo and removal of the sheds. Okay, we'd never done demo to that scale before, but we could handle it. And then the garage. It was a 2-car garage at the end of a long driveway at the back of the property. It was overgrown with vines to the point where you couldn't open the garage door. You had to go in through the side, which was just as well since the garage door was to be removed and disposed of. We went in the side door to take a look at what was held within, and like the rest of the property, it was full of trash and junk. Only there was a whole heap of bags of concrete. Other aged and broken construction material and debris was littered throughout. Well, that was going to be fun. On top of all of that, there was a tree in the backyard that they needed to come down, and every plant in the front yard had to come out. They apparently already had a prospective buyer or two who was very interested in the lot, so they could turn it into an apartment building. I was surprised they didn't want us to just tear down the whole lot to the ground, but I guess they know what they're doing better than I do. Well, this was quite the job. I wasn't immediately sure how we were going to easily handle the job, but we would figure it out. I told him I would have to email him the bid, but he'd get it soon. With this company, there was a bit of a bidding process. You submitted the bid sometimes against 2 or 3 other companies, and sometimes not. Then the bid would have to be grouped into the overall proposal in regards to the property. This would then all get sent up the line to the higher-ups, who would then make a decision. A week or so later, Jason called us up. Oh, happy day, we got the bid. I was happy to have the work, but it was a bit of a daunting task. We'd done many properties where there was this much stuff, but it was usually all inside. This was all outside on a large plot of land, and it was in the dead middle of summer. It wasn't going to be fun, that was for sure. After scheduling with Jason, we sat down and worked out logistics. The driveway was long and wide enough to put a roll-off basically right in the middle of the lot and make the walking distance that much shorter. Boom. We would get 3 guys to demo the sheds first, and then we'd work on the trash, then the plants, and end with the tree. Sounded easy enough. So we put our crew on notice, scheduled the dumpster, and on the day of the job, headed down to what was about to be a very rude awakening. On day 1, we arrived slightly late, about 20 minutes because of the traffic. I hate being late, but it wasn't so bad since we weren't meeting any client. We gave the tour of the place to the crew and showed them what we would be doing and then got started. The first thing we wanted to do was take the sheds down. My thought was we'd take off the roof, knock over the 4 walls, and drag them into the roll-off. Bada bing, bada boom. No more shed. Nope. It turns out I had no idea. I had no idea A, how sturdy these things actually were built, and B, how heavy stucco and roof tiles are. Well, let me tell you, I learned that day. Ethan and the boys started on the roof and cut it into sections and then demoed the support so it would all come off. Once the sections of the roof came undone and down, I, along with another guy or two, would drag the sections into the dumpster. I think it's more appropriate for me to say that they did it. I can haul my share of trash cans, but this was way more than I was prepared for. Then it was time for the walls to come down. We first had to remove the drywall from the corners and separate the studs so the walls would lose support and fall where we, well, they, could drag it to the dumpster. Once we removed the drywall, we found out exactly just how solidly these things were built. With the exception of the windows and the aforementioned electricity, water, and fixtures, well, they were built like a real house. Wood frame with studs 16 inches on center apart, paper, chicken wire, stucco, and paint. Turns out it wouldn't be a simple matter of pushing over the walls. We then had to remove the stucco from the outside corners so we could cut the chicken wire to then separate the studs so the walls could be knocked down. Now, realize that at this point in our career, we had only controlled demo experience, meaning we removed carpet, cut out some subfloor, and a vanity or three. We'd never had a call to bring an entire structure to the ground. Although we had demoed tin sheds, this was a whole other ball of wax. As it turns out, we had no idea what we were doing. We only had hammers and tin snips to remove the stucco and chicken wire. Well, not the best tools for this job. We were very much in the make it go right frame of mind and less of the how can we do this better? That would all come after the job. For now, we had to work with what we had, even if it meant extra work. Fast forward to about 3 hours later, and we had removed a total of one roof and three corners worth of stucco. Yeah, the first shed slash house was still standing, albeit a bit broken up. It was lunchtime and we were beat. The sun was out and it was beating down on us for all it was worth. It was hot, it was bright, and there was a lot more work to do. There was no way we were going to finish this in the 2 days we bid it for, which means we were going to be in the red on this one. So we quickly discussed how we were going to do this job a bit more efficiently. The conclusion we came to was a bobcat. It was small enough so that we didn't need a special license to operate it, and just enough to handle the heavy lifting and hopefully turn our misery back into money. One of our guys, Cameron, had a guy that his dad rented bobcats and other equipment from all the time. He was very reasonably priced and located not too far away. So we switched gears a bit and started loading up and removing trash from the yard, while I called and got the bobcat delivered. Turns out he was close by and fairly reasonably priced, but it cost extra for delivery, and he couldn't get it down there until the next day. Crap. Fine, it would have to do. We could spend today just on the trash and maybe get this job back on schedule. I paid for it over the phone and scheduled it for the next morning. Because we had a late start, we waited a little bit to take our lunch break. We worked for a little bit and Ethan decided to remove the vines from the garage. Of course, that would have been a lot easier if there hadn't been a bunch of wasps that made those vines their home. As Ethan began to pull the ivy down, said wasps swarmed out to see what was going on. Luckily, Ethan saw them and ran before they zeroed in on him. This, of course, didn't stop him from yelling and screaming and sending all of us into a panic. The wasps eventually settled back down and we came out of our hiding places. This was a good time to break for lunch. While we were out, we would grab some wasp killing spray so we could get back to work. When we returned to the job site, Ethan went straight to the wasp nests with the spray. We all stood back in case he missed. If you've never used this type of spray before, it has a powerful stream that shoots up to 27 feet. Ethan got a bit closer than that, but still far enough away that he'd be able to run if he missed any. Turns out his aim was true, and the wasps fell to the ground and flew no more. We all got back to work on the trash while Ethan resumed removing the ivy from the garage. Turns out there was a basketball hoop under all those vines. Of course, it was in pretty rough shape and would need to be removed. We decided on waiting on the big pile of trash, as this would be something that the bobcat could take care of very quickly, and so we went into the house to trash it out. Since the roll-off was getting full, we would have to wait on the demo of the bathroom so that we wouldn't have to hoist a bathtub over the side of the dumpster. As we were working in the house, we heard Ethan scream and we all ducked. We didn't know if it was a wasp or if a shootout was about to go down or what. After a moment, we peeked outside and saw Ethan grabbing his face and swatting at the air. Ah, wasp. Once he had calmed down and the wasps receded back to their nest, I went out to see what had happened. Ethan took his hand away from his face and there was a decent red spot on his cheek, just below his left eye. I asked him if he was okay. He said he was, and then he told us what happened. There was another nest tucked behind the ivy that was unseen, and because it was so far back, went undisturbed by the first round of vine pulling. The last little bit of vines was rooted pretty well into the siding of the garage, and so Ethan was yanking and tugging on them to get them down. When they finally released, what he thought was a piece of vine came flying toward him. He assumed it was a leaf or a twig, so he didn't think much of it, but at the last instant, he realized it wasn't a twig or a leaf at all. It was a wasp, and it was going straight for his eye. Luckily, he was just able to turn his head enough so that the wasp missed and only got his cheek. Apparently, wasps don't like their homes being destroyed or messed with in any way, and they don't mess around when it comes to protecting them. Who would have thought? If he had averted his gaze, it probably would have stung him right in the eyeball. Now, anyone who knows me will tell you that I cannot do eyeballs. Do you remember that scene from The Office where Andy is shooting an instructional film and he has to wash out his eyes and he starts freaking out and screaming? Yep, that's me. I can't do anything into, onto, or around eyeballs. It takes me forever to do my mascara. I don't know what I would have done had his eyeball swelled up or popped or whatever happens when a wasp stings your eyeball, but he would have been on his own. I love him to death, but nope, he would have been on his own. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Upon closer inspection, I'm not sure it stung him. Maybe it bit him? Do wasps bite and sting? Anyway, there were two tiny puncture marks at the center of the red spot on his cheek. It swelled up only slightly and lasted only a few minutes and then faded out completely within an hour or two. Shortly thereafter, the roll-off was full. It didn't look like we had made even a dent, but we did manage to fill up an entire 40-yard roll-off. Since they wouldn't be able to switch out the roll-off until the following day, we ended a bit early. So that was the fun and excitement on day one. The next morning, we arrived on time to see a new roll-off waiting for us. We started loading up the trash again until the bobcat arrived. It was supposed to be dropped off at 9 a.m., but it wasn't there as of 10, then 11, then noon, and still no bobcat. We had pretty much completed all of the loose trash, but we still had a couple of large piles and the structures to demo. We were about to take off to lunch when the bobcat finally showed up. It was unloaded and delivered, and we were ready to finally roll. But it was lunchtime, and we were already exhausted from the heat, the dust, and the heavy lifting, so we decided to break for lunch. Once we returned, Ethan got into the bobcat and went straight to the first structure. He used the bucket attachment as a ramming device, and within two hits, the walls were down. They still had to be broken up so the bobcat could easily lift it, without risk of a piece breaking off and falling on the operator. More snipping and smashing, but it was way easier going with that bobcat. Now, the driveway was, as I mentioned, very wide. It was wide enough to park the roll-off and then park the truck next to it. The truck was a truck we had recently acquired. It wasn't new, but it was new to us. It was only 6 years old and only had 87,000 miles on it. We put a shell on it to keep our equipment out of the elements and more secure, and it worked out great for us. So while Ethan was tearing down the structures with the bobcat, we were working on the piles of trash. I didn't see it until it was too late, but one of our newbies was about to throw a 5-gallon paint bucket into the nearly full dumpster. I caught him and yelled, "Wait!" just as it left his hands. As I said, the roll-off was pretty full and he had thrown it at a small pocket. It went up and landed in the pocket, but the bucket had been outside for God only knows how long, so it had become brittle from exposure to the sun and the elements, and as it landed, it exploded. All over our new truck. A fine spattering of pink paint coated the entire roof and some of the sides of the truck. No small amount of fucks were uttered, and we ran over to it and tried wiping it off with whatever towels, blankets, or clothes we could grab quickly. But because the truck was black and the sun was pumping out some intense heat, it dried almost as soon as it hit the truck. I was pissed, but I didn't even know how to be mad at that point. It was our fault. We didn't tell him we have to dispose of that stuff separately, and he was simply doing what we had told him to do. I mean, I don't even think I would have expected that thing to explode the way it did. It was par for the course on this job, and so I took it in stride. Now, Ethan was another story, but I was able to calm him down. We had managed to get the paint off enough so that it was hardly noticeable unless you got up close, but it was still not what you want to see on your brand new work truck. The initial estimate covered two dumpsters. Based on how much trash we had, it seemed like we could have gotten it all in there. Unfortunately, we didn't account for the sheds being so much, and so by the end of the second day, we had filled two roll-offs. The company we were working for was very explicit that they do not accept change orders unless they request additional work. We inspected the property and submitted our bid based off of that, so there was no requesting for additional roll-offs. This meant if we got another one, we would be eating into our already meager profits. So we decided that the next day we would bring our trailer and use it as a mini dumpster. It's a 16-foot flatbed with 4 feet high wooden sides. It's more work than a roll-off because we have to unload whatever we load, but it would be cheaper than a dumpster. We ended the second day a bit annoyed and completely exhausted. Day three was a Saturday, and so traffic was pleasantly not so bad. The house had been broken into for some reason. The door was kicked in, there was nobody inside, and there hadn't been anything to take, so I'm not exactly sure what they were after, but they decided they needed to get into the house. I let Jason know, and he wasn't too concerned, but I wanted to at least keep him posted on how things were going at his property. If you're enjoying today's episode, check out Resonate Recordings. They mix, mastered, and produced all of my episodes, and they're an awesome group. Resonate Recordings took all the worry and stress out of podcasting and made it such a unique and fun experience for me. Resonate Recordings is more than just a professional podcast editing and production service. They're like an invested business partner. Everything from hosting setup, RSS feed configuration, even to helping me find sponsors. I honestly can't say enough great things about them. I hired Resonate Recordings when I realized that I could either spend time or money. And since I can always make more money, it was an easy decision. Chances are, with a professionally produced podcast, making money off it might be easier than you think. Visit resonaterecordings.com and they'll do your first episode for free with no strings attached. But don't forget to tell them Vanessa sent you. Now back to the show. Today we let Cameron drive the Bobcat. He had some experience driving one, and so we figured it would be no problem. A quick recap on how to operate it, and he was off. It was like riding a bicycle. Some trash had been strewn about the dirt lot, and so Cameron scooped it up using the Bobcat, then went to tackle the large pile of trash in the back of the house. Ethan and I went into the house to demo the bathroom. The house was in poor shape, and so the demo was actually pretty easy. By the time we had finished up and went back outside, the trailer was full, so we headed to the dump. The truck was a 2006 Tundra and had the towing capacity of only 6,500 pounds. Normally, for our purposes, this is more than enough. We had packed it in pretty tight with the Bobcat, and when we went to take off, it struggled. It was a super heavy load, and we were trying to figure out what was in it that was so heavy. The dump was not that far, and so we weighed in and went to the designated unload site. Once we were in position and started unloading, well, that's when we found out what was weighing us down. It was dirt. Since we had been scooping up the trash off the ground, we had taken a bit of the ground with us in every scoop. It was bad enough having to unload a trailer full of debris, gross trash, and sharp and pokey planks of wood, but we also had dirt. I should actually say dust, because every step or every movement shot up a cloud of fine dust. We were hot and sweaty and there was no wind, so after an hour of unloading this trailer, we looked very similar to coal miners fresh out of the mine. We pulled around to the weigh station, and it turns out we had just emptied 2.84 tons of dirt and trash by hand. Talk about a day's worth of work. Although it wasn't really a day because it was still early and we still had a bunch more work to do. Cameron hopped back into the Bobcat and once again began scooping up trash. Only this time with the request that he try his best not to pick up so much dirt. This particular day, we had taken two vehicles to the job. Our babysitter had some family function, so she was unavailable for the whole day. So I took off at this point and left Ethan and the boys to work. I got home around 3 and relieved the babysitter. An hour or so later, I get a call from Ethan and I knew it wouldn't be good. Lo and behold, it wasn't. Cameron had been scooping the largest pile of trash and loading it into the trailer. Well, said pile of trash was apparently hiding the gas meter. Well, I'm sure you can guess what happened. The Bobcat was immediately turned off and the job site had to be evacuated. Ethan had already called the gas company, explained what happened, and the rep was on the way. What the hell else was going to go wrong on this job? What was supposed to be a quick 2-day job had just turned into a 4 days of everything going wrong. Every turn just resulted in more turmoil and chaos, and it wasn't even over yet. Ethan told me that the gas guy had just pulled up and he would call me back. My heart was racing and my fingernails were rapidly being whittled away from nervous chewing. It seemed like forever, but he finally called me back. Now, assume for a moment that you're the gas company and someone calls you and tells you they just hit a gas meter and gas is shooting out like an invisible geyser. What would you do? I would send a technician or a crew of technicians to fix it immediately. Well, you'd be wrong, apparently. They decided to send a rep with no tools or capability of solving the problem or in any way stemming the flow of gas. He took some information and a statement and then had to call in for a technician to fix it. So the gas guy and my crew sat around twiddling their thumbs while they waited for them. I don't know if you've ever experienced a busted gas pipe, but it's loud. It was so loud that Ethan had to go 3 houses down the street just to talk on the phone. Oh, hold on, because there's more. Now, while Ethan is on the phone telling me all of this, I could hear someone else in the background. I could hear Ethan bluntly respond that he was working and that he was on the phone. I asked him who it was, thinking it was one of our guys, but he didn't answer me. He just kept trying to talk to me and this guy who wouldn't leave him alone. If my heart wasn't racing before, it sure was now. This was certainly not a friendly dude who was just looking for some polite conversation. I was terrified. While Ethan was on the phone, these two guys had walked up to him and basically cornered him against a fence. They were trying to get money out of him, and I could hear him tell him he doesn't carry cash. He then explained that he was working and trying to handle a situation. Couldn't he hear the constant roar that sounded like a jet speeding down the tarmac? Ethan headed back to the house where the gas guy and the rest of the crew were hanging out in an effort to seek safety in numbers. Turns out there wasn't much hope of that. This guy continued to hound Ethan for money and demanded that he go with him to the liquor store to buy him some beer with his card. Ethan tried to explain that he couldn't, because he was trying to handle the situation and indicated to the gas guy as in, "Don't you see this isn't something I can just walk away from?" So this guy then goes to the gas guy and asks if Ethan has time to go with him to the liquor store. The gas guy said, "Oh yeah, sure," and then promptly pretended to take a phone call, got into his truck, and locked the door. Thanks, dude. I kept asking Ethan if I should call the police and told him to stop rudely brushing this guy off. But Ethan kept ignoring me and explained that his card was a business card and he couldn't use it to buy beer. At some point, Ethan said he'd call me back, which are some of the most famous last words. The way he was talking to this guy was not giving me the warm and fuzzies, and I was almost to tears that that would be the last thing he said to me. A couple of hours later, with me almost bald by that point, he called me back. The technicians had finally shown up and were fixing it. It was the end of the day and there wasn't much that was going to get done at that point, so they were on their way home. Ethan then proceeded to fill me in on what had happened. Now, backing up slightly, while Ethan was initially on the phone with me and being confronted by this guy, Ethan had looked over to the house in hopes that the rest of the crew would see him and come to his aid. They saw him all right, but did they come help him out at all? Nope. No, they didn't. They had stopped a passing ice cream truck and were happily eating ice cream cones, watching everything go down. Now, when Ethan saw that, he was internally pissed, and that's when he decided to just walk back over there. After more hounding, the guy went to Cameron asking him to give him some money. He had just bought ice cream and so obviously had cash. Cameron, being the nice guy that he is, said he didn't have any money and told him that Andrew, one of our other crew members, had just bought everybody ice cream. Well, everyone but Ethan, that is. I guess his thought process was that Ethan was about to be shot and so wouldn't have much need for the frosty treat. Not that it helps, but just to show you karma is always watching. Andrew had been the last to receive his ice cream, and after taking one lick, it fell off his cone and splattered on the street. So this guy then corners Andrew against the gas guy's truck. He had one hand next to Andrew's head and was talking almost face to face with him. While he explained that he just wanted a drink, he used his other hand to nonchalantly lift up his shirt, revealing the pistol he had tucked into his waistband. It was at that point that Ethan asked the crew to help him with something at the truck, and they all went to it and got in promptly and drove away. Now, I wasn't there for that part of it, and thank God, because I have no idea what I would have done. However, in relaying this part of the story, it sounds strange that they just walked away and got in the truck. But, I mean, I don't really know what else they could have done. It worked. They got away from him, and they were safe, but how do you just walk away from someone who just flashes a gun at you? Anyway, they drove to a gas station to wait for the guy to leave and the technician to show up. They hung out for a bit and then went back. Shortly after, the gas leak was finally fixed. There wasn't even that much trash left, maybe another trailer load, barely. But it was late and the boys were a bit shaken up, understandably. It seems Murphy's Law had finally run out of things to throw at us and decided to leave us alone. The last day of the job went without a hitch, and they managed to wrap up the job in only a few hours. It had been a completely miserable experience from beginning to end. We had been burnt by the sun, Ethan had been bit in the eye and almost shot, Andrew lost his ice cream, and it was a job that would go down in our books as the most trying of jobs we've ever had the displeasure of working on. The Cleaning of John Doe is written by my husband Ethan Fearson and is mixed, mastered, and produced by Resonate Recordings. If you would like more information, visit our website at thecleaningofjohndoe.com. Or you can join the Cleaning of John Doe discussion group on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter at John Doe Podcast. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. That concludes this week's episode, but while you're waiting for our next episode to drop, you might be interested in one of the following podcasts.
Have you been bludgeoned to death with Ted Bundy stories? Are you choking on too many Hillside Strangler podcast episodes? As awesome as those are, cleanse your palate and add something new to your true crime diet. Why not try some Dark Poutine, a podcast from north of the 49th parallel? We cover Canadian crimes and dark histories. Some of the stories you may know nothing about, but they beg to be told. And, with Canada being the biggest small country on the planet, we even have personal connections to some of the crimes and history we chat about. Join two real live Canadians every week as we serve up another helping of dark poutine. We are substantially creepy, sometimes meaty, always cheesy, but very rarely sorry. So come on up north and fill your ears with some dark poutine.
Welcome to the Murder Mile True Crime Podcast. My name is Michael, And each week I shall take you on a guided walk of hundreds of untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within one square mile. Proving that, if you dig deep enough, you'll find that on every street, in every city, there's a killer on every corner, death on every doorstep, and homicide in every home. Murder Mile is investigated using original police files and eyewitness testimony, with authentic sounds recorded at the murder location itself, and is accompanied by photos, videos, and maps to make you feel like you're actually there. A new episode of the Murder Mile True Crime Podcast is released every Thursday on almost every podcast platform. Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Murder, obsession, addiction, panic, schizophrenia, mania, violence, survival. I'm Kate. As a forensic psychologist and crisis clinician, I was in the middle of a lot of those experiences. It was my job to come up with an explanation for how the hell did we get here and what happens next. And I'd like to share some of those stories with you. Just make sure that you're ready, because sometimes after I'm done, you'll think, I felt better before I knew that. Ignorance Was Bliss is hosted at iwbpodcast.podbean.com, and you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and so on. You can reach me at iwbpodcast through Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and there's a Facebook group, so come and play.
Awesome. If you liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe. We were hot and sweaty, and there was no wind, so after an hour of unloading this trailer, the gas guy said, "Oh yeah, sure," and then promptly pretended to take a phone call, got into his truck. I guess his thought was that Ethan was about to be shot, so wouldn't have one to need for the frosty treat. Not okay. It's not okay. Oh, man. Andrew had been the last to receive his ice cream, and after taking one lick, now, anyone who knows me will tell you that I cannot do eyeballs. Do you remember that scene from The Office where Andy is shooting? Do you remember that scene from The Office where Andy is shooting an instructional film and he has to watch? Thanks for listening to The Cleaning of John Doe. Please join us next week for Is There Anybody in There? One of the most terrifying jobs we've ever done.